Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate File 1235 is legislation that tries to build off of what the city of Minneapolis has been doing to address youth violence as a public health problem more than a crime issue. In other words, it certainly does involve crimes, but we want to try and get at it up front, like public health, to try and prevent problems. And the legislation is fairly simple, and with the amendment in the budget division, should not have any cost to the state. We are trying to define what at-risk youth means and what youth violence is and the types of things that we want to have, the aspects of a program that we'd like to have that Minneapolis has had some great success in doing. They've reduced youth violence by more than a third in certain neighborhoods where they've had comprehensive programs that rely on connections between the school and community groups and others. And the legislation spells out what those programs would involve. And then the Commissioner of Health, page 2 of the bill, you can see the state's role would be the Commissioner of Health would be working with other commissioners to identify some community-based violence prevention programs that meet those criteria, and then would be working to provide technical support, as the original legislation said, within existing department resources, including assistance in seeking and applying for federal grants and private funding. And that they will monitor that. The amendment put on in Senator Berglund's division was that they shall apply for funding to support the activities described in the subdivision, and it's effective upon availability of funding. So in other words, instead of within existing resources, if they can get some resources to do this from federal or private funding, then they will undertake this. So we realize the budget situation, but we think this has been very successful programs. Minneapolis has been doing, some other communities have. We want to try and replicate that around the state.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Senator Frederickson, we're short one person for a quorum, so we're trying to get started and get some work done, but we can't take any votes yet. Are there any questions for Senator Marty? Mr. Watson?
Senator Marty, your bill as introduced was coded in section 145.958, but somewhere along the line that proposed coding got dropped out. But I don't see anything that makes it temporary.
Madam Chair, Mr. Watson, this is, I think there was a decision in one of the policy committees that it did not, that it should be in session law only, but it is it's not meant to be temporary. It is meant to be a permanent thing, and so I don't know, I don't really recall why the chapter 149, why it was dropped. I just vaguely remember somebody saying we don't need to have this in statute. We're not trying to say it shouldn't be in statute because we want this to be an ongoing thing, and we're hoping to build off of it. I would rather it be codified if we can.
Mr. Watson.
The proposed coding would be on page 1, line 6, before youth, insert bracket 145.958 bracket.
Someone like to make that motion?
Madam Chair, I'll move that.
Oh, wait a minute. We can't move it yet. We're short one person. I think Senator Stump's on his way. What?
We need one more.
We still need one more.
Madam Chair, maybe while we're waiting, if the author has a comment, I also noted that in order to address the fiscal concerns, the division report included language that said the Commissioner of Health shall apply for private, state, or federal funding to support activities that are described in the subdivision, and that's where the resources would come from. And on line 2.24 of the original language, the language remains that the department would be directed to do this within existing department resources. And I'm just wondering if there's a conflict there, if that language should be struck in relative to the division report language that they apply for.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I think Mr. Mossman makes a good point. The paragraph D was meant to say the effective date of this is when they they get the funding for it. And the original bill was within department resources, which would have required some state resources. So I'm not sure how you would delete that, but I think we want to.
Okay, well, let's just back up for a second that we do have a quorum.
Madam Chair, I'll move the division report.
Senator Betzel moves the division report. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair.
Senator Betzel.
On bill, page 1, line 6, before the word youth in the head note, I would move to insert a bracket for the quoting of the section as 145.958.
Okay. Okay, you hear the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Mr.
Mossman. Now, the next thing, Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair and members, I think that on line 2.24 of the second engrossment, if you were to strike the comma and within existing, and then on line 2.25 strike department resources, comma, then you would have that paragraph B that remains in conjunction with the division report paragraph D that makes the subdivision effective based upon getting the resources would make it work.
Senator Fredrickson moves on 2.24, delete comma within existing, 2.25, delete department resources, comma. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Murray, I know many communities had collaboratives that were actually doing this kind of thing, and I think it was the federal funding that went away, and many of them have had to shut down, even though they were operating kind of on a shoestring, and generally, capitalizing on volunteer kind of resources that you were talking about, or raising private funds for some really great things that have helped work with youth. But is this trying to replicate or put in statute that mode of modus operandi, if you will?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, largely speaking, so yes, there's a lot of good things happening that I think we recognize have been very effective. Minneapolis also had federal funds to do this that's also drying up. And so while we don't have the source for the funding yet, there is potential from a number of sources. And we want to put the framework in place so that we can expand this to make it happening in more communities, because I think you understand you spoke to the value of it.
Yeah. Any other questions? Is there a motion?
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 1235 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Senator Bonoff, are you ready? Okay. Senate File 347.
Might I suggest we adopt only one?
Okay.
And I think that the one later in time is the one from Senator Tomasoni's division, the GIN type one. If the two are identical,
Senator Tomasoni moves the Economic and Development Division report. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This bill is a bill for temporary Minnesota care coverage for unemployed workers. And I'm here at the table with Mr. Nelson from the department. What this bill does is provide very short-term relief. It's really a two-year program, whereas if somebody qualifies for unemployment insurance, they've been laid off, they qualify for unemployment insurance, and they have no other way to get insurance coverage. For example, their spouse does not have a program, they're not covered under the new plan by the federal stimulus dollars with regard to COBRA. They're the people who fall through the cracks within this area. This bill says that they have the option to elect to join Minnesota Care for a two-year period of time. The way the bill's paid for is there's an account set up where 10% of the unemployment check that they would receive goes into this account, as well as there's a mechanism for businesses who pay their unemployment insurance to have a 0.2% surcharge on their unemployment insurance. Now, actually, half of that was already happening for going into the displaced workers fund, but the other half would be an increase. So it's a 0.1% increase surcharge temporarily to cover the unemployment insurance during this time period. We believe that this, while a very small impact on business, is worth doing because the cost to the broader business community and families around the state, if we do not provide insurance for these people, becomes greater. When they have discontinuation of coverage, then, as you know, they have to go back in and try and get coverage. Then you get into all the things that aren't covered, and it gets to be a very costly venture for everyone. So at a time when we're trying to drive costs out of the system, this is a short-term solution.
Senator Olson.
I'm sure my mind's a bit in the fog, but didn't we add something to that unemployment tax in another bill? Or is that in economic development, or did that, and that workers' comp or unemployment comp? Have we increased
Mr. Nelson.
Some other kind, and has it gone through, or is it limbo?
Mr. Nelson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment
Mr.
Insurance
Nelson,
Program.
You have to speak up a little bit in this room. I don't think we have any amplification.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program in Minnesota. Madam Chair, Senator Olson, to your question, there was an increase from 0.1% to 0.12% in the Economic Development Omnibus Finance Bill, but that bill was vetoed by the governor. I believe it was repassed, and it is now on its way to the governor, but that has not been enacted. But I would assume.
You didn't say it was passed. I know we passed the second one. Was that still in it, or was that removed in the second one?
Madam Chair, Senator Wilson, that is still in that bill. What I would assume, and I haven't talked with the revisor's office, is that would simply be layered on top of this. So
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, that was the case, that there was an increase in your bill that's on the way to back to the governor now?
The bill was exactly the same. We didn't change anything in the bill in regards to the unemployment insurance that passed the first time before the governor. So everything in there is the same. So I think we changed the same culprit.
So there was no that increase to
0.12. The 0.12 is in the bill.
Is in the year bill.
Yes.
Okay. Then is this on addition another point on top of that?
Senator Bana.
Madam Chair, this is an additional 0.1. And Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I believe that would be an addition. Is that right, Mr. Nelson?
And Senator Bonoff, I know the question has come up about why you didn't, this wasn't taken out of the Health Care Access Fund.
Madam Chair, members, there was a motion in the state government or budget division to do that by Senator Roebling, and that was voted down as the Health and Human Service Division chose not to do that.
And this also has passed through the Economic Development Division, too.
Madam Chair, members, there is a bill that is in the House that does use the Health Care Access Fund to pay for it.
Senator Olson, did you have something else?
Madam Chair, Senator Bonham, you said in the House version it does pay for it in that way. Could we resurrect that option? Senator Tappan?
It wasn't my suggestion, I just heard. I just said I was curious. Senator Bonham or Mr. Nelson, What is the split here between the laid-off worker and the business in terms of the fee?
Madam Chair, to your question,
Mr. Nelson.
The unemployed worker will have, if that individual elects coverage, and that's just an elective, they will have their unemployment weekly benefit amount reduced by 10%. Business employers will pay a flat fee into the fund. And I should also point out,
do we know what the percentage is between the worker and the business? That's more my question.
Madam Chair, that's kind of hard. We know exactly, pretty close, how much the additional fee on employers will raise.
Mm-hmm.
We have, and the real guess here is, how many workers will opt for this coverage? We know how many workers would be, a pretty good estimate of how many workers would be eligible for the coverage, but how many workers would choose to do it? That we don't know, and that's why I work with the Department of Human Services, and we just kind of did a reasonable guess as to what it would be. But it's relative, the workers' portion is relatively small in relation to the employer portion. But that still is kind of a guess, because we don't know how many workers. We're just kind of guessing how many workers will choose this option. But it is fully funded. And that's what we had to ensure, that it was fully funded, and that's why the assessment on employers. But the if the Commissioner of Human Services determines that there's more than sufficient money coming in, you can notify the Commissioner of Deed, and the fee on employers will be lowered, and could be lowered on a quarterly basis. That if there's more than sufficient monies in this new fund, the fee on employers would be lowered, so that we wouldn't overcollect.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bana.
Just want to draw the committee's attention to Section 2, Subdivision 3. That is where it spells out that should that fee be more than enough, that they can lower that fee.
Okay, any other questions? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What do you estimate flat fee is going to be for the employers?
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, the 0.1% surcharge increase. I mean, how much will it raise?
How much in dollar figures are we talking about? Not percentages, but dollars.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, the overall estimate is that between the deduction that would be on the employee and the contribution by the employer, we have forecasted $88 million. To be raised to take care of this particular provision. Now, since I brought this bill forward, there's also been a provision put in the conference committee, the Health and Human Services Conference Committee, that says if an employee has been laid off and they would otherwise qualify for Minnesota Care, the state is going to pick up 35% of their cost. So we may even be having a smaller subset of people qualifying under this method than we originally thought. So again, this is all estimates, which is why there's a provision to keep lowering the amount if it's not needed.
Mr. Nelson.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, to your question, the 0.1% would raise a maximum of $26 per worker. What it actually averages out to is about $20 per worker for each employer. That excludes government and nonprofits. You know, we're talking for-profit businesses would pay $20 per worker. That's the average they would pay, is $20 per worker, but it could be up to $26 per worker per year over a two-year period.
Okay, any other questions? Do we have a motion? Senator Tomasoni?
Madam Chair, I'll move the bill, but I want to also point out to Senator Olson on her question about my bill. The 0.12 increase blinks off in 2 years. So it goes back. In the bill that we passed, that was the economic development bill, the 0.12 increase blinks off at the end of 2 years and then goes back to 0.1. And then I'll move.
Okay. Senator Chamasone moves Senate File 347. Any other questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. Senator Moi. Senator Moi's.
I hope everyone's wearing mauve
today. Is that what mauve is? I thought that was lavender. I think this is mauve.
Well, English is my second language.
I've heard that excuse before. Senator, 407.
Madam Chair, members.
Who did that? Senator Betzel moves the division report. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, members, this is the money mapping bill, and in short, it is a small pilot project to ask that we try to map the state and federal resources that are being used to for the benefit of children and youth in the state of Minnesota. It has been a long project, and as introduced, was a lot broader. It has been narrowed down to a pilot project that will be a test of our current, our brand new budgeting system that's being put together. If you will look at the division report, there was a delete everything amendment in division to make this into a pilot project. And then in the division, we added language, I believe, at the top. The second sentence that says that the project will be done or using existing resources available to the department. And then on the bottom, there's a reference in terms of all the different committees that will be involved in the report. We added the Department of Corrections, and that's the bill.
And Mr. Mossman informs me that any dollars necessary for this is being carried in Senate File 2. Well,
Madam Chair and members, and I think relative to what Senator Moi just testified to, there's a fiscal note that I think you have before you. The Department of Finance had indicated that they had a preference for $68,000 to complete this. Senate File 2, which has already been taken up and passed by this committee, did appropriate $68,000 to the Commissioner of Finance for that, and that bill is that legislation is still pending. This here division report then would move the same language with the requirement that the Commissioner of Finance provide this work within their existing resources, and so you would have the two pieces of legislation, I think, in the conversation at the same time.
Madam Chair, Mr. Mossman, I'm a little bit confused. If Senate File 2, let's say, at the end of all the negotiations, of course I would want Senate File 2 to be successful, but should Senate File 2 not be successful and this as a bill goes on its own, because we have the language in there within existing resources, this will be fine, right, from a fiscal standpoint?
Madam, Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair, members, that's correct. This would be fine. It would require the agency to perform the research, to perform this work within their resources, as it states.
And Madam Chair, so the members are clear, the agency did consent to this language.
Okay. Any questions? Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Watt, maybe I don't really understand one concept in your, on page 1, line 13. All the funds that the state expenditures that serve the primary function of, and one of the concepts, because they're all is permanence of children. What would that mean? That they stay a child, or that they stay in one place, or that, what could that mean? The state will always have children?
Senator Moi.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, yes. In essence, that's one of the goals, is to look at in all the programming that we try to do for children, one of the criteria is to track whether that's in particular, I think this is a reference to our children who may be involved in the different systems, whether that's through education or housing or in health and human services, looking at the permanent attachment of children to their environment and to the services to those programs. So that it will allow us to evaluate in terms of school, how transitional are we making, you know, our the funding that we're funding children in our school systems. You know, are we just allowing them to kind of going from school to school in the services that we're addressing the needs of children in health and in human services, in child protective services? To what degree are we looking at permanency as one of the goals for our children?
Senator Olson.
I said several things that were kind of contradictory, so and you said yes to all of them, that they would always stay a child, was one of them. I said, but you mean stability of location.
Right. No, and I'm sorry, I misheard you. I didn't understand what your comment was. I thought that you had said that this is to look at how we could provide permanent services to give stability and permanency to where children are. Yes.
Senator Ma, it's just the use of the word permanence somehow could mean so many different things that I wondered if you would narrow that.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, if it provides vagueness, you could move to delete that, and I think that the objective will be incorporated into the rest of what it is that we want to look at, if you think that it's going to be problematic.
So
I mean, these are just some suggested criteria.
Staying in one foster home. Right. That's what we usually think of it.
You know, if you were permanently a child, you couldn't age.
Senator Olson, why don't you just delete it?
Senator Olson, Madam Chair, Senator Olson, would you substitute stability for permanence?
Stability could be emotional stability. That could be a lot of things. You want stability of location?
As is the will of the committee. I'm not attached to this word. So
stability would be fine.
Stability?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, then I would move on one line 13 to delete permanence.
Use line 9. Okay. Oh, the division report. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And insert. Okay, Senator Olson moves on the division report, line 113, to delete permanence and insert stability. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion permits. Senator Fredrickson?
Madam Chair, Senator Wong. When you talk about expenditures and funding, does this include only direct funding or also indirect? Does it include just the money that's being paid out or expended, or does it include the staff, time, and agencies that are required to administer the program?
Madam Chair and Senator Fredrickson, it is my intent to cover both direct and indirect expenditure. And it is because of that desire to want to capture the totality of the kind of resources that we're investing in children, we're making this a pilot project to test whether or not that's realistic. And if it's not realistic, then we would like them to come back to say that if you want to measure these kind of expenditures or the investments that we're making, the kind of pots that we would suggest you use to track this would be. So it is my intention that it would be both direct and indirect, but of course we would look to the individuals who are doing this pilot project to come back and tell us what's realistic and what's doable and what's not doable.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we talk about department, what department are we talking about? Are we talking about health or human services, or are we talking about education?
On 1.11, Senator Moi?
Madam Chair and Senator Stump, this would be the Department of Administration, I believe. Is it no?
Management.
Finance. Finance, Department of Finance. Because it's the Office of Management and Budget that's going to do the pilot project.
Any other questions? Someone want to make a motion? Senator Fredrickson moves that Senate File 407 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair members.
Thank you, Senator Moise. Today is Moise Day. I said that's Violet. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Betzel moves the division report on 1208.
Senate file 1208.
I'm looking for it. Just a minute. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator
Dibble. Thank you, Madam Chair. What Senate File 1208 seeks to accomplish is recognize those circumstances where an individual has had to have the state step in after they've exhausted all their own resources when they're typically getting towards the end of their life and they're in long-term care and the state has had to step in and pay for that care. They've exhausted their resources and the state pays for a long-term care and their health expenses through the time in which they pass away. As a part of that, as folks are probably very familiar, a number of years ago, not too distant past, we've allowed the state to place a lien on that individual's house, so the state then can subsequently recoup some of those costs after the patient passes away. In those instances where the surviving spouse remains in the house, in the homestead, the satisfaction of that lien, of course, which is satisfied upon the sale of the property, is held off until either the spouse moves on to a different domicile or passes away themselves. However, if there's another individual who is a joint tenant or tenant in common for whom that house who has an ownership interest in that house and for whom that house is their primary residence and their homestead, the state doesn't recognize that circumstance, and the state would have the right to ask that person to move out so that they could then sell the house and satisfy the lien and recoup those health care expenses. Turns out that the department itself has just an administrative policy, and they don't actually do that anymore these days. And so what this bill does is recognize and kind of codify and formalizes that policy of the agency. That's why, Madam Chair, this doesn't really carry a fiscal cost. There's a zero fiscal note that may be in your packets. And so this bill accomplishes two things. It makes sure that there's proper notice to those who have an ownership interest in the property. That's the first part in Section 1. And then Section 2 codifies the current policy of the agency. It says, upon the approval of a hardship waiver, to not read the full paragraph, that person would have the right to stay in the residence until they move on to
Any questions?
Greener pastures.
Any motions?
Madam Chair, I'll move the bill as it was amended by the division.
Senator Betzold moves Senate File 1208 as amended. Any other questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam
Chair,
members.
Senator Torres Ray. Betzel moves the division report. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Torres Ray, just we have a zero fiscal note. Why don't you tell us briefly about the bill, and we're mostly concerned about the money.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. As you just stated, Madam Chair, the portion that was that had a fiscal note for this bill was removed, and it was placed within the Human Services Omnibus Bill. That is in referral in the MFIP portion of the bill, Madam Chair. So that Article 4 is no longer in this bill, and that was the reason that it was forwarded to this particular committee. Madam Chair, right now I have only Article 1, which refers to child care. Article 2, which is program integrity, and Article 3, which is adult support. So there is a zero fiscal note to the current form that is before you.
Are there any questions from members of the committee? Senator Higgins moves that Senate File 1509, as amended by the division report, be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Day. Senator Erickson Ropes. Senator Betzel moves the division report on Senate File 1512. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Erickson Ropes. I think you just walked in the room and here you are, wearing your mauve blouse.
There we go. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. I have a pretty easy bill for you today. This should just be an easy pass-through to the floor. It's a bill that would increase the blood spot fee from $101 to $106, and that's to do some early diagnosis for deaf and hard of hearing newborns. And with the fee increase, the pays for the cost of the program. I believe the department is neutral on this, and I have some folks here from LifeTrack Resources, which is the nonprofit that administers this program. There's no cost to the state, and I think we've worked out all the kinks. We just need you to review the fiscal part.
Okay. Would you like to make a few comments? Introduce yourself to the tape, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
You have
to speak up. We don't have amplification.
Okay. My name is Candace Lindo Davies. I'm the coordinator of Minnesota Hands and Voices at LifeTrack Resources.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your name.
Candace Lindo Davies.
Lindo Davies.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm the coordinator of Minnesota Hands and Voices at LifeTrack Resources. I'm a parent of a child who's profoundly deaf, who was born at a time when newborn hearing screening was not available. He was late identified as a result, and we've had to make up for a lot of lost time. This program supports families who have children who are deaf and hard of hearing, and this would allow them to be early identified and get services quickly.
It is. Okay. Senator Day.
I'm sure I'd move the bill.
All right. Any other questions on Senate File 1512? Yes, Mr. Watson.
Madam Chair, I believe there's in the members' folders a committee in Grossman.
Yes.
Division report. Senator Erickson Ropes had an amendment to that committee in Grossman that would make the appropriations consistent with the fiscal note.
Okay.
And I assume that you'd want to do that with the A3 amendment. Offer the A3 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Watson, that would be.
I think we have the amendment. Let's pass out the A3 amendment.
I don't think the amendment is in your folder.
No.
No. Senator Berglund moves the A3 amendment. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Then Senator Day moves Senate File 1512 as amended. Any other discussion? Senator Olson. She's looking for the proper place. And you found it? The division report on line.
Okay.
The committee engrossment. Okay. I'm looking at the wrong one myself.
Thank you.
So
So did we have the committee engrossment before us, though? We adopted the division report.
Madam Chair, we adopted the division report.
Uh-huh.
The committee engrossment then incorporated those amendments
okay.
into the bill in order to facilitate the three amendments.
Okay.
The amendment is drawn from the committee engrossment.
Great.
So that's the bill as amended by the division report.
All right. No other question than Senator Day moves that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I was just wondering if this fee that is charged for these tests is typically reimbursable by insurance.
I don't know. Madam Does anyone know? Senator Berglund.
I didn't hear the question, but I have a correction to the amendment.
The question was, are these fees usually reimbursable by insurance?
Well, I'm trying to make sure in the bill that hospital births that are in the MA program will not pay that. Because there's no way they can. There are some hospitals that have a lot more publicly paid for births than other hospitals. And so it would be really hard just for them.
Okay.
But otherwise, it's just a cost of doing business at the hospital. I mean, maybe we get charged back to the parents, and whether their insurance pays it or not, I'm not sure. But it would just be a cost.
It probably depends on the insurance company. I don't know.
You know, if they've got an HSA, they're going to pay so much one way or another. The first dollar.
Okay, Senator. Berglund, what was your correction to the
well,
A3?
On the A3 amendment, it should have been page 2, delete lines 17 to 23. We still need this appropriation on lines 24 through 26 because that is to DHS, and that does offset then the cost to the public hospital.
Okay. Senator Berglund moves on the A3 amendment. Line 112 to delete 26 and insert 23. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails.
And for the fifth time, Madam Chair, I want to.
Senator Day moves Senate file 1512 as amended. Any other questions, comments?
No.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you,
Madam
Chair.
Senator Day.
Senator Day.
We now can take up Senator Dahl's bill. Senator Dahl didn't leave us, did he?
Yep.
Oh, he's right there. Good. He was the first one here this morning.
It's all right. I'm close by. Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Senate. Yes.
Do you have any copy?
Okay.
Senator Berglund moves the division report. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. Senator Dahl, the fiscal note is being copied, so why don't you just explain the bill to us briefly.
Madam Chair, what this Senate file 704 would do would require the Commissioner of Health, in consultation with the Minnesota Administrative Uniformity Committee, and the Commissioner of Human Services to study and make recommendations on the feasibility and barriers to simplifying healthcare administrative transactions through electronic data interchange and establishing a single standardized system. It's estimated there's more than 1,000 healthcare payers in Minnesota, each with a somewhat different system for verifying eligibility and processing claims, and many are now exploring the use of available technologies to assist providers in verifying eligibility and determining patient responsibility for some or all of the cost of care at the point of registration. In Minnesota, however, there's no requirement that payers collaborate in creating a single standardized system, and without such a requirement, and it's likely that multiple systems using different technologies will emerge, losing a great opportunity to simplify our standards and save millions of dollars in unnecessary costs. With the division report, we've taken out any the fiscal costs of this. I'm talking with the Commissioner of Health and the Health and Human Services Committee, which this bill was heard. They could work this into their immediate and long-range plans. So with that, I stand for questions. We also eliminated, Madam Chair, any deadline for when that report would have to be coming back to the legislature, also mitigating the costs.
Okay, Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair and members, so that there's no alarm, the preliminary a revised fiscal note was requested on the division report, and that wasn't completed yet. That would show no cost, as Senator Dahl has is testified to. The fiscal note that will be being distributed for you in lieu of that momentarily shows a modest cost for the Department of Health and the Department of Commerce. And if you look at the division report, you can see, as Senator Dahl testified, that the Department of Commerce is deleted from responsibilities under the bill in the division report. And then the lines on page 2, lines 4 to 6, that had the report requirement have been removed from the bill. And that removes the Department of Health's cost from the bill.
Senator Robley.
Senator Dahl, even if it doesn't cost the state anything, how much will it cost the medical providers?
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, could you repeat the question?
I'm wondering if there's a cost to the medical providers if we require some uniform technology, how much that would cost them to purchase and install.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Rowland, this is being requested by the medical community because it will reduce their costs because they have all these different forms they have to deal with. It adds to their cost. You know, we wish we could have actually speeded this up. We couldn't do that, but it will be the next project that the department will take on in order to get those cost reductions for practice.
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, and that's, I appreciate Senator Berglund's answer, and that is the overall goal, is to reduce long-range costs and get rid of some of the bureaucratic administrative costs that drive health care costs up.
Senator Stump. We don't have an updated fiscal note. They are copying the outdated fiscal note. If members feel comfortable, based on Mr. Mossman's comments, we could proceed. Mr. Watson?
Well, Madam Chair, while we're waiting.
If we're waiting.
Some grammatical things about the bill. Page 1, line 8. After feasibility, insert of.
Okay.
Likewise on line 11, after feasibility, insert of. On line 23, I think that recommendation should be plural.
Okay. What did you say about recommendation 23?
I think it should be plural.
Plural? Senator Frederickson moves the grammatical changes. Everyone heard them? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Roebling.
Chair, we've been moving bills pretty fast this morning, but I'm wondering if there's any other testimony on any of them that in this one or any that have come before us. I mean, the room's full of people, and I keep thinking that I don't know what they're all here for if they don't want to say something.
They're all here for False Claims Act, which we can't take up until Senator Cohen gets here. Senator Roebling, it's true. I haven't asked for any testimony. And I just assume that people will talk to the staff if they wanted to testify on something. And I think a number of people did say on bills that we haven't brought up. But I don't think any of these bills so far have been controversial. But maybe I'm wrong. Okay, members, the copier is jammed. Mr. Mossman has informed us that the dollars have been taken out of this bill. Are we comfortable moving forward?
Yeah.
Senator Frederickson then moves that Senate File 704 is amended. Senator Stump moved it? I'm sorry. Senator Stump moved that Senate File 704 is amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And now, is there any other one that we can take? I have to leave in 5 minutes. Can you do Senator Ottman's? Can you, which one is quickest?
Chair's quickest. Senator Ortman was here. Senator Ortman is here. Senator Ortman, she's been here for a while. Senate File 963. She did. Senator Shine will be next.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members.
Do you have one?
Senate File 963 is a series of amendments to authorizing language that was set up in 2006 to authorize the creation of a Forensic Laboratory Oversight Board, the FLAB Board, if you will. And what the board does, it's comprised of experts in the field of forensic science and law enforcement and criminal justice organizations. And what they do is they provide oversight for forensic laboratories in the state of Minnesota. It was one of the first in the nation.
Senator Day.
Madam Chair, there is an amendment, A3, that I would like to offer.
Oh, the A3 amendment, right. I thought it was already division report. We all have it in our packet. Okay, explain the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When the bill was originally introduced, it had a fiscal note requiring $125,000 to pay for staff for the board so that they could do a study and that they could develop a management system for reporting of concerns of malpractice or negligence. Because the funds were not available, I'm here today to ask that the A3 be adopted to take out all appropriations from the bill. The policy changes in this bill are still very important to the operation of the board and for the member organizations, and so we'd like to pass it without the $125,000 appropriation, and that's what the A3 accomplishes. It would allow for, Madam Chair, for the board to receive funding, say, from a grant or private entity that could fund that same $125,000, and I do believe there may be federal funding available for just those types of purposes. So we want to authorize them to hire staff in the event that they can obtain that funding and also to perform that study to the extent of their ability.
So, Madam Chair, I renew my motion.
I'm just trying to engross the amendment. Can we look on page 5? It says delete lines 10 through 14. That seems like maybe those line numbers aren't correct.
There's an insertion, Madam Chair.
And then lines 6 and 7 of the amendment are inserted, and then it picks up right with line 15.
And it picks up? Then, okay, then it works with 15? Okay. Any, Mr. Mossman?
Madam Chair and members, and I don't have an answer. I'm trying to work out on line 1.6 of the amendment the reference to from when sufficient funds are available from any source, which could, I mean, it sounds like the appropriation is being taken out of the bill, which essentially means the policy will be there and the agency can choose to do it within their appropriations, or the legislature might appropriate money sometime later. This language here is broader than we would typically have, I think, just in terms of from any source, and I'm wondering otherwise if we could either specify that it would be from available resources within the agency's budget or strike that language, and then a future legislature could determine if funds were available.
Ms. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In response, I had hoped that we could keep it very broad because there are private entities that might be interested. I know that Target Corporation does quite a bit of forensic work in our state. There may be other, say, law firms or others that might be willing to participate by providing funds for this organization to do its work, and so I don't want to prevent that. To the extent that we can get a federal grant or some private funding to do this work or within the agency to do this work, I think that we should authorize it, and I hope that the committee would do that.
Thank you.
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Senator Ortman, we're just talking about different options. Are you thinking primarily of getting money from a non-state source, or are you thinking that they might be able to go ahead within the limit of available appropriations, the money that they have already, and maybe if they get a gift, they can add that? So we might just say within the limit of available appropriations, the board shall study or may study, want to make it permissive.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Watson, I'm concerned that if you do that, then if the agency itself cannot provide the funding, then they're not allowed then to do it. If they can, they can actually get private funding and gifts, donations, or grant funding from whatever source. So what I'm trying to do is keep the options very broad. If they can receive the money or from a law firm, there are other folks that are interested in the development of this board and are likely to contribute funds for these specific purposes. As I said, the fiscal note only came up to a total of $125,000. I myself will be out trying to find $125,000 to get this work underway. And so I want to keep it as broad as possible, but of course make it consistent with other work that we've done here at the Capitol.
Mr. Watson, could we include the language you used, and or non-state sources?
Mr. Chairman, when an agency receives a gift, as they might from someone else, then that goes into a gift account and it becomes an appropriation to the agency. So that would fit within the limit of available appropriation. But if you're trying to, you're not trying to prevent them from using their existing appropriation. You just want to ensure that someone else comes up with the necessary additional money so that they can actually do the report in a decent way.
Right. And Mr. Chair and Mr. Watson, this is a separately existing board. And so the gift might go directly to the board as opposed to the BCA. And so that's what I'm trying to authorize, is they can receive funds from any source and they can spend it in these particular ways.
Mr. Bob.
Mr. Chair, members, otherwise, you know, I just a suggestion, I think I'm assuming, too, that the author would like it to be limited to the agency's resources, not, or it could be any resources anywhere.
Yes.
If the general fund forecast reported that there was more money. I mean, the language is potentially written broad enough that if there was any money become available from any source. So I'm trying to figure out, I think the author's intent is clear. The committee could act on the bill, and if there's cleanup language necessary, too, would be another option.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Foley.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee here, I know this is a desirable function, all right, and that needs something, but what disturbs me here is we've got a situation where we know we've got some fiscal note out there, and so that's too big, so we draw that out. And we still haven't gotten rid of the expenditures in my judgment. So this whole thing looks very strange. What is this forensic laboratory board with all the listed people in there currently in operation? And if so, who's funding?
Senator Foley, why don't we just hold that question for a second while staff confers with Senator Hard. Listen, do you want to answer this?
Sure.
Identify yourself, please. I don't know if you've done that yet.
Chair, Senator Foley, my name is Frank Dolish. I'm the chairman of the Forensic Laboratory Advisory Board.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Dolish.
Thank you. The board is really made up of volunteers, and so all the work that the board has done has been on the volunteer time of those board members that include law enforcement, public defenders, county attorneys, sheriffs, chiefs, a representative from the Minnesota Court of Appeals, and some other forensic science background individuals. Any operational costs have been borne by the BCA.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Foley.
Mr. Chairman and members, that clearly is what I'm trying to figure out, is that we do these things and it makes a difference as to who it is that's doing it. And I applaud the laboratory board, but the fact is that if we're going to require a fiscal note, we should require it. And if we're not going to, let's figure out something different.
Senator Higgins.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Foley, the amendment would take away the appropriation, which would get rid of the fiscal note. And what I think what Senator Ortman is trying to do is to make it so if the FLAB board, again, my favorite name, the FLAB board, we're all charter members over here, can get some funds that they can go and do the things that are now part of this bill. And so this is an attempt to make sure that some of this work gets done with no funding, and we can hope that somebody will step forward and help pay for some of this. Now, you'll notice that there's an addition on line 2.8 that would allow the board to employ an executive secretary, which would bring some needed stability to the board. And there again, it was originally a shall and then becomes a may, because of course they can't do that until they get some money.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, do we have a mechanism for private money going to a specific board without it coming to the state through a general fund or other means and then be appropriated to them? I know that in some areas within education, we had to create like a foundation in order for them to be able to accept donations as well as be able to operate the state money.
Mr. Mausman?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson and members, the gift fund is generally available to receive contributions that come to the state. And if they come for a specific purpose, they would be available then to the agency that they come to the state for. And that's
thank you.
Mr. Watson?
Mr. Watson, have you
pondered this and have a suggestion for us?
I have a suggestion. On line 1.6, delete when sufficient funds have become available from any source, comma. And then on line 1.7, after shall, insert seek money from non-state sources to. And then on line 5.25, after line 5.25 of the bill, insert any money received is appropriated to the board for the purposes of this section. And because now we've added back an appropriation, we can delete line 1.4 from the agenda.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, the only thing that kind of jumps to mind is, what if a lab that could be investigated would want to donate some money? There'd be a little bit of a conflict of interest there. So how do you prevent that from happening?
Senator,
I mean, it's just hypothetical. Maybe it would never.
Senator Ortman, on Senator Anderson's hypothetical situation.
Well, Madam Chair, actually this bill sets up some of the parameters for that and authorizes and requires the recusal of any member to act on anything that would impact their own interests. So there is conflict of interest provision in here. The board has yet to receive any request for an investigation. The concern is what happens when they do. Can they investigate it? And right now they don't have any resources to investigate anything. So what we're really doing is putting together seed money to do the study and to hire some staff.
Well, Mr. Chair, I understand that. I support the goal of what you're trying to do here. I'm just wondering, if they're going to go out and seek funding, would they perhaps seek it from the labs to all contribute some money, the labs that they would potentially be investigating? I mean, I understand you're looking for federal grants, and so that's why it's hypothetical. Maybe that would never be contemplated. I just don't want that to happen. It doesn't seem appropriate, that's all.
Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, I think that we have rules and laws about gifts in place, and I think that they would be applicable here as well. I certainly can't prevent that, but I would be as concerned as you would. I'm sure the board would as well. Take that into consideration before receiving the gift.
Mr. Chair, maybe we could just say they shall seek non-state funds that don't include sources that are potentially investigated. Or something like that, or where there would be no conflict.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I was just sitting here thinking about this, and you contribute as a member of the bar, you contribute money to the bar and to your ethics lawyers board to investigate lawyers. I contribute a licensing fee to my veterinary board to investigate veterinarians that aren't doing what they're supposed to do, and this is just a that's across the board. Every licensing group is contributing money to possibly investigate themselves. So I don't see that that's really that big a problem.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Anderson.
I see a big difference between everyone. You said across the board. If everyone is required to contribute across the board, then you don't have a conflict, I don't think. But if one lab would say, oh, I think I'll write them a nice big check, then you could, and no one else, you know, that could potentially create a conflict. Issue.
Senator Higgins, did you hear the amendment proposed by Mr. Watson?
And
would
I did.
Would you like to move it?
I actually even wrote it down.
Would you like to move the amendment?
Sure.
Senator Higgins has moved the amendment as prescribed by Mr. Watson. It's on the division A3 amendment on lines 6 and 7 and partly on the bill, page 5, lines 25. Discussion on Senator Higgins' motion. Senator, Mr. Watson?
We should also delete line 1.12 of the amendment.
And Senator Higgins will incorporate that.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Anderson?
I guess I wonder if Mr. Watson could help me here. I support what you're trying to do. I just have that little lingering concern to how do we avoid conflict, and does existing law take care of that?
Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair, don't we have a general conflict of interest part of statute that maybe could be referenced or would just automatically cover that sort of conflict if it arose?
Sure. Senator Higgins, are you directing that to somebody specific or
anybody who might know?
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Watson.
Higgins, I suppose there are laws one way or another, but it might be useful to add a few words here. After sources, ensure that you do not have a conflict of interest. Seek money from non-state sources that do not have a conflict of interest. Study and prepare a report.
Mr. Chair, I would support that. That would be. Let's
okay, I'm going to Senator Ortman, do you have a response to that?
I'm hoping that counsel wouldn't mind reading the amendment back so I can hear it again.
Mr. Watson.
So the complete insertion on page 1, line 7, after shall, would be seek money from non-state sources that do not have a conflict of interest. 2.
Senator Higgins, would you incorporate that
yes.
into your okay. further discussion on Senator Higgins' motion to amend? There being no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of Senator Higgins' motion to amend indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Further discussion on the bill. Senator. Senator Higgins, the question is, have we adopted the A3 amendment? I'm going to ask staff if we have.
We just did.
Just did.
That was the A3.
And now I move the bill.
No. I don't think so. It was my amendment.
Senator Higgins had moved an amendment.
We amended the amendment.
The motion comes up now to adopt the A3 amendment as amended. Further discussion on that? There being no further discussion, we proceed to vote. All those in favor of the A3 amendment as amended indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Now, Senator Higgins, did I hear you move the bill?
I did.
Senator Higgins moved that Senate File 963 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the floor. Discussion on that motion. There being no discussion, proceed to vote. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the bill is sent to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Chair and members. Thank you.
We'll take Senator Scheid's bill next. The committee has before it now Senate File 340. Senator Scheid. Senator Tomasoni has moved approval of the division report. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the division report is adopted. Senator Scheid, tell us about Senate File 340.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we probably wouldn't even need to be here since the division, and it's to no fault of the chair of the division that the votes were there to take the funding out. The chair did not promote that, but so there's no funding in here, but we do need funding. So I have decided to pursue the legislation here, and I want to tell you about the bill. It is called, we are calling it the Homeowner Lender Mediation Bill. It was an idea of the Attorney General, and I think maybe in response to some things that the governor said last year when I think we had Senator Anderson's bill that I think it put a moratorium on foreclosures for up to a year.
Not exactly.
It delayed, and there were partial payments to be, people had to make payments. Anyway, the governor did veto that, but commented that he thought if we maybe went towards something like farmer lender mediation, we moved in that direction, that might be something that he would consider. And that this is founded, if you will, in the same principle as the farmer lender mediation, which we've had since 1986, which I believe saved thousands of farms at the time. And I think we also recently voted to extend that because it's been sunsetted. But this is about homeowners, not investors or landlords, but homeowners, homesteaded property owners, being able to take their, once they're in, been notified of foreclosure, they would be eligible for mediation. But before they would go to mediation, they have to go to the counseling that we enacted last year. So there's a counseling that's provided by nonprofits around the state. I know Habitat for Humanity, the Minnesota Homeownership Center, Lutheran Social Services, and other entities do that kind of counseling. And that's funded, I think, through money that the Housing Finance Agency must get through the federal government. And so that counseling occurs. In order to be eligible for mediation, a homeowner would have to go to the counseling first. And once they determined that they were able to, you know, there was a possibility for some kind of workout. And some of those things get worked out and renegotiated in the counseling. But if they can't, then they would be able to choose to go to mediation. And let's see. I suppose we should talk about how many we think there might be. And obviously, it's an inexact number, but the speculation is there could be up to 30,000 foreclosures in Minnesota in 2009. I don't know. I hesitate to bore anybody with a visual aid, and I don't know if you can see this map, and maybe I would like to just pass it around. It's the community that Senator Foley and I represent, and I live in Brooklyn Park, had over 1,000 foreclosures last year. And this shows you the foreclosed homes and the vacant homes. Obviously, foreclosure is a devastating event for a family, for the homeowners, but it has a very negative impact on neighborhoods and communities. And frankly, all of those would benefit if we were able to save some of those homes from foreclosure through mediation. And indeed, and I've been contending all along, that the holder of the mortgage stands to benefit as well if there is a if there are renegotiated terms of the mortgage. And I don't know how any of those might be worked out, but we would like to see give this a chance to save some homes. I think it will help not just families and communities, but it will also help those who hold the mortgages. And you can imagine, already through counseling, most of our banks in Minnesota are participating and coming to the discussion, if you will, with the counselors. And many cases are offering new terms to borrowers. But we've had particular trouble getting people from out of state, the holders of the mortgage, because they're, they've been securitized. They're a stack of papers, maybe this high, and they're just letting them be foreclosed. And those investors in those securities are just out. They're just out all of their initial investment. This would keep some of those properties able to be saved, meaning payments. Maybe there are new terms. They might not be as great as the terms were in the original mortgage, but on the other hand, though, that hasn't turned out so well, and they're going to lose all of their investment. This will save some of it. So I do have some amendments that I would like to explain, and because I have an idea for how to fund.
Okay, Senator Side, would you give us just a word about the financing, what's required for this, because that's primarily what we're interested in.
And Mr. Chairman, that's right. I wanted to kind of tell you how important it is, and then tell you that the A28 amendment adopts a scheme, if you will, for funding this mediation program. And I will tell you that the original bill had an increase of $4 on recording fees to fund this. That means all the documents that are recorded having to do, you can see they're actually in this amendment. And for,
Shide, we're attempting to locate the A28.
Okay. What it
Senator
does.
Senator Shide, I wonder if you could clarify something for me. I just got an email this morning from a community banker that was concerned. I didn't make the connection or didn't realize this was on the agenda this morning, or I would have printed it out and brought it with me. But kind of taking exception and asking me to oppose this bill because of the community, because it would draw in the community banks, which have a broader relationship with their customers, and do a great deal to try what he's referred to as preventable foreclosures, to work with them at the first sign of any difficulty and try to keep that from happening. As I was listening to you, it seems to me that a foreclosure notice needs to have been sent before this is initiated. So it would seem to me, would that exclude by virtue of that the community banks that actually work in advance of trying to prevent foreclosure? Can enlighten me, because I'm not that up on banking.
Mr. Chairman, yes, to the extent they were able to prevent foreclosure. If the community bank, however, did proceed to foreclosure, then this kicks in. But if they're able to negotiate with the borrower and renegotiate terms, undoubtedly, that's probably part of it, because that's happening now. It's happening either with individuals and their lender, or if they're able to communicate with the lender, or they're happening at the through counseling, then if that's worked out, there's no need for mediation because there's not going to be, you know, foreclosure. So, well, I shouldn't say if there's counseling, there's already been a notice of foreclosure. But before they notify that there's pending foreclosure, yes, they were able to work things out and ideally prevent any foreclosure action.
Senator Olson.
Now, you said, Senator Scheid, that if there's the counseling, often if they are now providing that counseling, that is not they're not affected by this additional role, or what?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, if they're doing the formal counseling that we have, that we enacted last year, they've already given notice of foreclosure to that borrower. But anything before they do that, they're free to do that on their own with, you know, and trying to avoid foreclosure for as many people as they can. And I think they know it's in their best interest, you know, to do that. Frankly, the concern here is that there's some, you know, funds that are holding, pension funds or what, you know, investment funds that are holding a number of these securitized mortgages, and they're just letting them all go to foreclosure. And these are the people that most of all we think we can, you know, force to the table and, you know, I would say try to save them some money.
Senator Robley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Scheid, how many months delinquent do you have to be before you get a notice of foreclosure? And then in this provision, how many more months do you have for the mediation?
Senator Scheid.
Maybe Mr. Frichte from the Attorney General's office can help me with this. I'm taking up all the space.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for our records, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kermit Frichte. I'm an Assistant Attorney General. Senator, to answer your question, most mortgages have a time frame when they say someone's in default, but it's typically after missing two payments. The testimony that we've heard from the banks as this bill has worked its way through is the whole foreclosure process takes somewhere 14 to 16 months. When a foreclosing creditor, a bank or whoever it is, gives notice of intent to foreclose, they serve a counseling notice as well. The borrower has to request counseling within approximately 15 days. Under this bill, counseling would run 60 days, and then the borrower would have the right to request mediation that would also run 60 days. And there's been a lot of work as the bill has moved forward to make sure that the timelines in this bill track the existing foreclosure timeline so it doesn't lengthen it.
So, Mr. Chairman, have you found the A28?
Mr.
Oh,
Chairman,
it's being
yes, we found the amendment and it's being copied.
Mr. Chairman, I might offer another amendment that would be an oral amendment, if I might.
Senator Scheid.
And I guess I can't officially offer it, but I'd ask someone to delete Article 2. That's a provision that Senator Ortman added in the Judiciary Committee, and I actually thought we kind of intended to do this in the division, but I neglected to do it. Similar language that accomplishes the same thing, which actually increases the reinstatement period and changes the sheriff's sale, makes the sheriff's sale be later, does not extend the foreclosure process, but just extends that reinstatement. You know, you're able to reinstate up until the sheriff's sale. Reinstate means bring it current.
Senator Scheid.
And so if we could just take out Article 2 of the second of the bill.
Senator Scheid, does this have financial ramifications?
Mr. Chairman.
We try hard not to undo policy committee work in finance if there's not a financial implication.
Mr. Chairman, I'm hard-pressed to say there's a financial implication. I just know that improved language of that, and we can wait till the floor. Improved language exists in other bills that we are dealing with.
Senator Scheid, I think the committee members would appreciate that.
Then that's fine. I just want people to know that if anybody complains to you about Article 2, it's my intent to take that out on the floor.
Thank you.
It should not affect. Then do you have the A27?
We have the A27.
That's pretty simple. That there was encouragement in the division that we ought to maximize the use of volunteers, which has always been the intent of the Attorney General's office, to use as many volunteer mediators as they can. And so it's just language that kind of says that they shall try to do that if it's, I think it's practicable, is the word.
Senator Metzen, would you move the
amendment? I'll move the amendment.
Senator Metzen has moved the 827 amendment. We'll wait a few more seconds until it's distributed. Had a chance to look at the amendment. Senator Metzen has moved adoption of the A27 amendment. Discussion? There being no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of adopting the amendment indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment's adopted.
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
I think this is might borderline on not so much money, but I guess it could be. On page 6, the one-on-one mediation stuff, it has to be one-on-one. I'm told it's pretty tough, almost unworkable in some cases. I'm just wondering, you've got enough stuff. I refer to point 633. My concern is at the discretion of the mediator, because we could go ahead with all the other ways of doing this, interactive telephone, other electronic means. I mean, somebody might have the mortgage. I mean, we certainly want to keep where you have to communicate, talk to everybody, but it's the one-on-one thing that if we could get about a minute and a half of somebody to explain why that's kind of unworkable, that would be all right.
Senator Metzen, if it's a minute.
And Mr. Chairman,
minute,
if I might, while there's somebody coming to speak.
Just 1 minute. I think we all are in agreement. We want this mediation, but just give the folks a minute. Then.
Mr. Chairman, committee, my name is Kathy Haney. I'm a lawyer at Fagery & Betson, and I represent Wells Fargo. We do have a concern about the requirement to have a face-to-face mediation. We've generally supported this bill. We really appreciate the time we've spent with Senator Scheid and the AG's office in terms of some of the changes. But the language is still puts us in a situation of having a face-to-face mediation meeting as opposed to being able to do it electronically. It gives us a lot of heartburn. We'd have to bring people generally from out of state, as would several of our other banking colleagues, arrange a meeting room, have the potential of having no-shows, and it just adds a lot of stress to the whole process. I've had a lot of conversations that I don't see or hear with Ms. Beckman of Habitat for Humanity, and they as well do all their counseling electronically, and she says it works very well. They've not had any problems with it, so we're hoping that you will consider letting us do the mediation electronically as well. We believe it's better for the consumer and certainly better for the banks, and will accomplish exactly what we're trying to do in the bill. Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, is the errant verbiage that at the discretion of the mediator, so in other words, you would just as soon have mediation meetings maybe held, just take that caveat out of there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, that's exactly right. Just delete at the discretion of the mediator, so that it's clear that we're doing our mediation meetings by interactive telephonic or other electronic means.
Senator Scheid.
And Mr. Chairman, it's obviously up to the committee to decide this. I think that once you open this door, everybody runs through it. And we won't have anybody coming to the mediation table. And we're particularly interested in those as I said, those investment funds, those holders of these mortgages, these securitized mortgages, of getting someone here face-to-face in with the mediator as much as we can. Right now, it's very difficult to even get any contact by the phone with these entities because you run into, you get the servicer, and you never get the party that holds the mortgage to the bargaining table, if you will. So, you know, you can...
Senator Shide, does this have any financial implications for this bill and funding this bill?
As Ms. Hani is indicating, it may have, it probably does for the lenders. On the other hand, if they're able to save a mortgage, then their loss is less.
Chairman, I'd also say that it costs the state more too to put people there, so it is a money issue, and I think.
Mr. Chairman, the mediators, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Metzen, the mediator's there, and the homeowner will be there. I don't think there's.
Well, you've got a hefty fiscal note. What is that all about?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that was the A28 amendment that I wanted to discuss, and it really isn't a heavy fiscal note.
Senator Metzen, the amendment's going to be offered in just a minute. Yeah. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, if the problem is the holder of the mortgage and they're expected to be a part of mediation, and they don't answer the phone, then even if you had it electronically, you would not be succeeding. So that wouldn't work, you know. I'm not sure why the discretion of the mediator would get in the way of what you're saying.
Senator Shine.
Mr. Chairman, I would like, I'm confident, and perhaps Mr. Fichte can say something to this as well, that the mediators are going to use telephonic or other electronic means as much as they can. I mean, they want to get this going. They don't want to spend days here in mediation. We want these mediations, I think, would be relatively short, you know, an hour or two. And we think that that can work. But if they're having trouble with a particular entity of getting them to participate and help modify mortgages or have them mediated, then I think they ought to have the discretion to require a presence. But I'm confident that they would use telephonic or other electronic means as much as they could as well.
Senator Olson?
Well, so, Madam Chair, if they can't get them to cooperate and the mediation doesn't occur, then what?
Senator Shine?
Mr. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. They can't get them. What is there any chain of events that follows that?
Mr. Chairman,
refuse to cooperate.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, if you're thinking of the way we have counseling work now, they don't have the authority to require the presence or even participation in the counseling. The mediation requires the holder to participate in the mediation.
So, Mr. Chairman, if they don't cooperate, then they can't foreclose?
I have Mr. Fichte.
Not cooperating, or is there an advantage to them
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, if they simply refuse to cooperate, it will slow down the foreclosure process by a couple of months. But there is no, the judicial oversight was removed from the bill, so that if a creditor simply does not cooperate, it will take them a couple more months to foreclose. But the bill also does not force a creditor who goes to mediation to modify the loan. It's right in the language. There's no forced modification.
Members, I have a couple other members who want questions to ask. I'm going to call on Senator Foley and then Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. But when you're looking at the materials in this bill, some of this must be used through community mediation. I've been doing mediation work for Anoka County for 14 years, and it's a fairly common practice to provide no-cost or low-cost mediation. The other thing I'm curious about dealing with is the generally the courts order some type of mediation or other type of ADR, and why was that removed from the bill?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, this isn't about a court ordering mediation, because this is a requirement that if you're going to foreclose, the borrower has the opportunity to have to be offered mediation, and in the bill also makes it clear that they have to go through the current counseling process before they're eligible for mediation. So they haven't gone to court. This isn't about a foreclosure action in court. So I think it's the intention of the attorney, I know it's the intention of the Attorney General's office, to use volunteer mediators as much as they can, which is the amendment that was adopted, you know, kind of just says that. But also, they'll be looking at real estate people with an expertise in real estate who have done, you know, may have done mediation, retired judges. They're going to be looking for low-cost mediators, and I'm sure that community mediators will be among the group of people that would be considered. We're just not requiring certain mediation. And so we know that some of this will be volunteer, and that amendment I keep referring to, I mean, I know you have Senator Metzen's amendment, but I do have a way of paying for it.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple questions. First, I want to know what amendments have been moved here. I thought I heard Senator Olson move to delete at the discretion of the mediator. Did Senator Metzen also move to delete the sentence
Senator Metzen.
We have adopted one amendment, and Senator Olson, I believe, moved to delete some language on page 6, line 33, at the discretion of the mediator.
Line 31.
It wasn't clear to me if she was going to continue to pursue that. Or
so, Mr. Chair, the last sentence that requires them to appear in person, that was deleted already?
No, I...
Did you move that? I'm confused. What's in front of us?
Mr. Watson,
okay, so
would
just
you?
The phrase?
Nothing's been moved.
Okay, except for Senator Olson.
Yeah, she did.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Watson.
Senator Anderson, you made a good point, but I believe that Senator Olson's amendment was only on line 6.31.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, I guess let's figure out what we're talking about first. And I have a question.
Of the division report. So we should be working on the division report.
So, Mr. Chair, I had heard Senator Olson say to delete on line 31 at the discretion of the mediator, to delete that phrase. That's what's in front of us?
Yes. There has not been a motion to delete that sentence on line 33 with this guy at this point.
So, Mr. Chair, then I have a question, if I may.
Senator
Anderson. Senator Scheid, is there anything in the bill that requires the lender who participates in the mediation to be someone with authority to negotiate? Or can it just be, you know, any old person
Senator,
they send from the company?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, in the... I think it's the division report on page 9 of that. If you look at good faith required, it does on line 9.19 and 20. Failure of the creditor to designate a representative to participate in the mediation with authority to make binding commitments. So,
okay.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. And also, then, there's the section about. It says in back to page 6 that the meeting may be held by telephone or video conference. And then the next sentence says by interactive telephonic or other electronic means by which they can all participate. Are those two different definitions, or am I confusing? One of them was only referring to the initial meeting. I mean, I'm not sure if that's describing same thing, or
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, it may well be that there is only one meeting. One of the hopes we have by having people go through the counseling is that they will come to the table prepared. They will have everything in order that's needed to present you know, the facts, their ability to repay on new terms or whatever in their situation. So,
and Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Anderson.
I think perhaps I'm following up on your question. I'm not sure if this is really a finance issue, and maybe this should be discussed on the floor.
Sure.
Senator Metzen.
Oh, yeah. It's not a finance issue. It's going to cost taxpayers about $7-8 million.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
On a recording fee.
Mr. Chairman, my amendment talks to that. That's why I had hoped earlier that we would do it.
Just to make one thing clear.
But not less
it's
quite
certainly
three and a half.
Revenue. You're adding $125 for every recording.
No.
And what other, well, that's what I get out of it. Tell
Mr.
me why
Chair,
not.
Can I just clarify? I think the bill or the division report that's in front of us has that removed so that it would be a voluntary, all the mediators would be voluntary. I'm asking, is that what's in front of us? And then there's an A28 amendment which would put the fee in and the fiscal impact, but we haven't moved on that amendment yet. So I guess that's the bill that's in front of us now is voluntary for mediators. Is that true?
Senator Scheid?
Mr. Chairman?
For clarification, will your A28 amendment affect the section on page 6 that we've been discussing about at the discretion of the mediator?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think so.
So, Senator Olson, do you want to pursue your motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to understand this, but even carrying out by electronic means has a cost, is what I hear you saying. Yeah. Or does it not?
Yeah, it would have a cost, but I don't know proportion of what would be. I think of your. See, I think the job could get done that way, you know. And we're just always keep in mind we're adding another $11 million to the taxpayers here.
Senator
with A28.
Mr. Chair, I think if we adopt A28, then this amendment would be in order because it could affect the taxpayer cost or the appropriated dollars. But I think as the division report is in front of us, it would be a purely private cost that we're discussing. Who would pay for it would be at one of the private parties, and I don't think that's the distinction I'm just trying to make.
One more time. Let me try it one more
Senator
time.
Senator Metzen.
Let me try it one more time. The A28 adds $125 per county recorder fees when their deeds are recorded. It adds $125. How much are on the recording fees today? Who can tell me that? Not including the 125. Every time we look for money, not every time, many times we look for money around here, we'll put it on these fees. Well, it's your constituents. You're going to have another $125.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, actually, it doesn't do that to recording fees. It's when you issue the notice of pending foreclosure for an foreclosure by advertisement, which is the way most of foreclosures happen, or the Liz Pendency notification, which is when there is a foreclosure by action, which would be court. This is paid by the foreclosing party. So this would be the holder of the mortgage paying and the amendment, I originally had $250, but we realized we didn't need that much money. So if you have 30,000 notices of foreclosure, that's when the fee is paid. It is absolutely, so it's not, I mean, I understand. Well, I'm going to say it's probably not generally taxpayers. It's going to be probably covered by negotiated at the mediation table. I'm guessing that those holders of those mortgage notes are going to be putting that cost on the redeeming or the renegotiated terms for the homeowner, the borrower.
Chair, one more time. The holder of the mortgage is going to pay for this. Now, they're the ones, let me try to get this right. They're the ones that have the money out and the other people aren't paying, right? You're not paying. So, by the way, holders of the mortgage, you're not paying your bills. We'll charge you another $125 because you're not paying your bills. So, you know, if somebody's paying the $125.
See, procedurally, we have Senator Olson's, I think, was going to move, and we've had a suggestion that the A28 would be relevant to this discussion.
Mr. Chairman, why don't I withdraw my amendment? If it's not addressing the concern that was raised, let's withdraw it for now and deal with the other. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that somebody's convinced.
I bet that will be.
Senator Anderson.
I'd be happy to move the 828 amendment if that's Senator Shide's wish.
Senator Olson has withdrawn her amendment, and Senator Anderson has moved adoption of the 828 amendment. Has that been distributed?
Yes.
And Senator Shide, I believe this is offered on your behalf. Would you describe the amendment?
No, thank you. And, Mr. Chairman, it does what I just described it. It says that at the time, in fact, it will be, it's in the last paragraph. It's, I think, in here in three places in this amendment. But if you look on page 2, line 9 through 14, it says, from the effective date of this legislation through the end of 2014, that when you're recording a notice of pendency of a foreclosure by advertisement or Liz Pendens for foreclosure by action, that would be the holder of the mortgage, that's increased by $125. Right now, today, if you go back over to the language on page 1, I believe that that is a $46 fee for recording that instrument today when you're filing those. So I believe that we'll be adding $125 to that. I expect that that will be wrapped into any new terms of a loan if it's mediated. And we figure that with about 30,000 foreclosures filed, if you will, that about half of those people today or less are going to counseling, and then some fraction, that takes it down to 15,000 people, some fraction of that, probably, let's say 10,000 or so, would be actually in mediation, but the 30,000 foreclosure notices would be paying for the mediations. And you know, what this has done is accomplishing something. I know that the governor's concerned about having the fee, if you will, the cost of this program relate to the situation, to the transaction. The original bill has a $4 recording fee increase. That is still obviously an option, and that appears in the other body's language. They took it to $3, and that's an option here as well, to just go back to the original language of the bill and put the recording fee on everybody who's recording a document, who's buying a home. I don't care for that. I know the realtors really don't like that. I understand that lenders and holders of mortgages don't like this, but it will get wrapped in, I'm sure, in some way. It will be recouped by them. And it relates to what's happening. It's the lender and the borrower who are involved in this foreclosure process and mediation, counseling and then mediation process, that would be paying this fee. And that's why I like it, but I understand that there's opposition to doing it. But
Senator Dill, did you have your hand up?
Yes, I did.
Senator Dill, then I'm going to ask.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Shide, I did the arithmetic on $125 times 30,000. I came up with $3.75 million. And I've got the fiscal note in front of me. I haven't had a chance to really study it carefully, but is this 30,000 foreclosures something you anticipate every year? So, or is this a one-time, or is this over the biennium?
Well, Mr. Mossman maybe can
clarify
that.
Ms. Chair, Senator Dill, and members, just a couple comments on the preliminary fiscal note that you have in your packets. If you look at the front of the fiscal note, and actually let's go to page 11 of the fiscal note, you'll see there in the detail about a third of the way, the third paragraph, second paragraph under assumptions, that the Department of Finance, in estimating the revenues that would be generated from the fee, that an earlier draft amendment had the fee at $250. So the revenues from the fee are assumed to be at the $250 level. The A28 amendment sets those fees at half that amount, at $125 million. So if you go back, members, just to summarize, then if you go back to the front of the fiscal note, the first page, and let me give you some new numbers. On the front of the fiscal note, then, essentially under revenues from the general fund there, if you just cut each of those numbers in half, the $7 million becomes $3.5 million. The 5.3 million becomes 2.65 million, and the 3.5 million becomes 1.75 million. That would be the fees under the revenue stream under the A28 amendment. That would change, just dropping down to the total net impact on the state general fund. The expenditures projected by the department, by the Attorney General's office, pardon me, would be pretty much almost equal to the 3.5 million that is anticipated to be generated from the fee. In later years, in fiscal 11 and 12, the 3.4 million estimated by the Attorney General here would be greater than the amount that is projected by the fee revenues. However, the fee revenues are based on an assumption of a declining number of foreclosures being filed and requests for services being sought. And I believe that the AG's office, and they can testify there for themselves, would feel that maybe there would be a commensurate or offsetting change in their expenditure workload if there was a declining number of cases. Also, the 3.4 million is kind of based on a steady state number of workload over the 3 years. And with that, I think if the AG's office wants to.
And Mr. Fricke, do you want to comment on that? Is that consistent with your thought?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it is. And as the foreclosures drop, we see there being less of a need for less mediation and less costs.
Okay, thank you. Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you're dealing with mediation, that even if it's free, it isn't free. That the individuals that do the mediation, gradually, they're not costing anything, but you have to have somebody set up these things and arrange the meeting, and so you're really looking at somewhere probably mediation that goes on for quite a period of time. So the overall cost, while it looks cost, you probably have a two-time person goes out and sets up the meetings, gets all set and so on.
Senator Scheid.
Well, Mr. Chairman, for one thing, we know that some of the mediators will be volunteers, and some will be paid, and some will be paid more or less, I suppose, depending on what they agree to. But that will be arranged by the Attorney General's office. And that, and this is a first come, first served. I mean, this, once you don't have the money, you won't be, you aren't going to be having mediations. I mean, if they run out of the funding. So it's not an ongoing process. Once the money is there, you have a limited amount of money because you're limited by the number of notices of foreclosure. I mean,
Senator
Higgins. That does.
Senator Higgins, I had you on the list of comments.
This is a little bit off subject of the fees, but on 2.12, there's a reference to Section 557.32, foreclosure by action. I think foreclosure by action is in 581, so I'm not sure what that section is.
The amendment or the bill?
In 828.
Thank you. Senator Scheid or Mr. Fricke, are you here?
Yeah.
The amendment.
The question is to the A28 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not. We have that under 557. It's also on page 5, and it's going to be on the last page as well, on page 8. I have to look at 557.02, and I don't know if the.
If so,
maybe
Senator
someone
Higgins
can tell me what 557.02.
Senator Higgins, is your question, is that the correct reference?
Mr. Chair, I just don't know what the correct reference is. I know that 580 is foreclosure by advertisement, 581 is foreclosure by action. And that's drummed into my brain.
Yes.
There's some reason that it's based on.
And, Mr. Chairman, I just need to know what 557, I know I can't get over there.
Maybe we could hold that question. I think Senator Olson had a question, too. There's Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, 557.02 is headed notice of list pendants.
Ah.
Yes. Senator Scheid,
so
this so
that's what
it is a correct reference.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, back to the from what the mediation services will cost, even if they're voluntary or at a reduced fee, if there are expenses that are incurred by the mediator, would they be covered? For example, if the mediator has to travel to a face-to-face meeting, would that be covered whether they volunteer or not? Would that be a public expense, or are they expected to keep that?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, by public expense, you mean that funded by the fee in here, the fee increase. I think it is the idea that there would be mediators all over the state, so you wouldn't have a lot of people traveling, for example, out of St. Paul to go to these mediations. They may very well choose to hold down expenses by holding a telephonic or other using other electronic means to hold the foreclosure. That I would be something that the Attorney General's office would arrange with the mediator. So there would be those understandings, obviously, before any mediator was out there incurring big expenses. They wouldn't be used very often if they did that, I'm sure.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Olson.
I'm still trying to withdraw through that amendment, but trying to reconcile, the initial meeting may be held by telephone or video. So that is at the discretion of the mediator, too. All meetings that would be held by electronic means would be at the discretion of the mediator. Do you think that there's enough the natural instinct of the mediator would be to hold those that use electronic means, or would there be the expense of the face-to-face?
Senator Scheid.
I'll let Mr. Fricke, Mr. Chairman, if you need.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the intention of the Attorney General's office is to have the vast majority of these mediations and initial mediation meetings be held by telephone or electronic means. That's the most cost effective, and in most situations that is going to be sufficient to get the job done. And earlier, when the language was put in this draft of the bill, the thought was, well, there may be a situation where the mediator might have to require someone to show up, but we still hope that the vast majority of these would be done by electronic means.
So,
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, is there a way of reworking the emphasis there that would give some comfort to those who feel that that this might not be a form that would be chosen and have the best likelihood of getting all parties communicating?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, and it may be, and I don't want to draft it here, and I know it doesn't really address the finance or my financial interest, of the committee here, but I think we could do something where at the discretion of the mediator, they may require people, to be there, some kind of language like that. So and I'm willing to work toward that, and I would
is there further discussion on the A28 amendment? Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, there is someone who would like to testify on this amendment, Ms. Kay Ruckey from the Minnesota County Recorders Association, if she could say a few words.
Okay, we don't normally take testimony. Sit down, Ms. Ruckey. We don't normally take testimony in Finance Committee, but you certainly may. It's a member's prerogative, so short testimony is appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee, and thank you, Senator Scheid, for your work on this. I am Kay Rookie, the Martin County Recorder in Fairmont, Minnesota, and I'm representing the Minnesota County Recorders Association. Senator Scheid has done some work on this, turning the fees around in different ways to make them accommodate for this, the foreclosure issues that we have and the problems that we have in the state of Minnesota, and we are sensitive to that. But as county recorders, in 2005, we had passed and revised a bill that has very specific to our operation and our fees go to the standardization of our fees. They go to compliance issues, our technology thing, issues that we have, and also with our, we feel that they're equitable to our county customers. We do oppose the bill because of the additional fee, because it does create a state mandate on county government. It also creates a surcharge, which we would then be burdened with. We record over 400 different types of documents, and in this amendment, it lists two. It lists the notice of pendency to foreclose, and it also hits on the les pendens. The les pendens is not specific. We would have to search every document to see if it was specifically for a foreclosure. So there needs to be some cleanup in this area on this bill. Also, along with the attached amendment, it mentions we have two different types of property in Minnesota. One is abstract and one is short. And in the abstract portion, they're talking about memorializing, and we don't memorialize in abstract and in torrents. If we were to have a foreclosure on a condominium or any large building that had to be memorialized with more than one unit, it would be $125 for each memorial, for each certificate. Condos can have over 100 units in them. So there is concerns with this type of specific fee on one specific document. Statewide or nationally, we are our recording fee is a very standard fee. It's a flat fee. And as recorders, we would have to notify all of our customers, including our national customers. And we are concerned with the sunsetting issues of these and the staff work that would be involved in this. We would now have to take our systems and create one specific type of fee for one specific type of document and calculate out those fees specifically. We already give $10.50 to the state in our recording fee, and now this would convolute this just one more step. And I would be open for any questions.
Questions for Ms. Ruffin?
Mr.
Senator Scheid?
Mr. Chairman, do you have a position on the $3 fee for every?
Any recording, Mr. Chair, any recording fee that we would have to add on creates a mandate to county government. It creates additional work for not just the recorder's office, but our auditor treasurer's offices and for our staff. Any fee, we would have to recalculate all of our systems to handle these, and then once they're sunsetted, then we're going back and doing this again. It creates quite a bit of difficulty in it. We do not want to set a precedent of adding surcharges to recording fees because we have so clearly worked on the recording fee as a very transparent piece of documentation.
Senator Metzen.
Just keep in mind, I mentioned it earlier, that there's a surcharge here with an additional $9 million. So, and another question I always ask, sound like a broken record, but how many attorney generals do we have? Or assistant attorney general. I know we have one attorney general, but how many assistant? My point is, every time we ask a department to do something, any department, not just attorney generals, we add 5 people or 10 people or 17 people to carry out the work. So in this one, the way I read it, there's 5 more attorney generals going to be hired. And I guess my question is, maybe I'm wrong on this. Aren't there people? I know they're busy people. You know, can we share some of the load? Can we have the existing people we have on the payroll do some of this work, or do we always have to add people? We see it every time we have to ask a department, whatever department, to do something. Well, we need 7 more people. We need 13 more people. Now, in this case, we need 5. So that's my question. You know, on the 5 people at what, 100 grand a piece or whatever it might be, it's half, $600,000, and so.
Do members have questions for Ms. Ruckey? Ms. Ruckey,
mine was more of a statement, I guess.
Thank you very much for your for coming today and for your testimony.
Well, Mr.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, just briefly, I guess mine is a comment as well. I understand what Senator Metzen is saying. I understand what the recorders are saying. Nobody wants to pay for this. Nobody wants to collect it. It's not fun for anybody to pay it. It's not fun for anybody to collect it. Nobody wants to pay taxes to pay for this. I mean, the question is, I'm not saying this is a perfect solution, but if we care about, you know, mortgage foreclosures are a plague on our state and our nation, and we got to do something about it. And we need to find a way to do it. And, you know,
it brings to mind we're trying to run government on the cheap these days. And so somebody's got to pay if we want to solve problems. And so if this isn't the perfect solution, find another one. We need another one. And, you know, we don't have any money in front of us to pay the price. But it's got to happen. Otherwise, people lose their homes. Children get pulled out of school. Vacant homes sit and attract crime to neighborhoods. I mean, we tried last year. We passed a bill. The governor vetoed it. This is a really good faith effort to find another way to get the job done. And members, we've got to get the job done or we're letting down the people of Minnesota if we don't. So, sorry, that was a soapbox, but we have to find a way to solve this problem. And if this isn't the perfect solution, I understand that, but we need a solution.
Okay, on Senator Anderson's 828 amendment, Senator Day, did you want to comment on this, on the amendment?
I don't care what I comment. Go ahead, do whatever you got.
Senator Dill, on the 828 amendment.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Shide, if the 828 amendment fails, that means $125 fee fails, but then does your bill then still have a $3 fee or $4 fee?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Shide.
Mr. Chairman, no, it does not.
It doesn't have any
fee. We would need to reinstate the language on the original bill. And I would ask that we would just need to reinstate the original language.
And Senator, on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, why
Senator
not?
Day.
Might as well. First off, because Senator Anderson said doing something government on the cheap. First off, we're talking hundreds of billions of dollars. Hundreds of billions of dollars that we sent back to the banking industry. Hundreds of billions of dollars. Okay. In my area, when I look at all the foreclosures, and Senator Scheid is much more of a feel-good type person than I am. You all know me well enough.
Absolutely.
I guess I'm not. So I'll tell you what. I'll tell you, talking to my realtors and talking to people in my area, somebody would go out and buy a $150,000 home and they had no down payment. The realtors would help them along, go get a mortgage person and whatever. And this is pox on both houses, people all the way around this whole thing. But then the house goes to $100,000. You can have all the mediation in the world. The guy said, you got to be kidding me. My house is worth $100,000. I'm out of here. Now, if the attorney general has enough time on their hands, that I find it enough that when some of my constituents want to get things, it takes a lengthy time to sometimes get opinion. And they have time to listen to 20,000 people, email them or call them up and say, hey, we want to start a mediation. Then the second thing is, to Senator Metzen's question, now what's going to happen is as the people walk away and we're trying to put all this stuff together, they're going to charge fees to counties and to the people that put the loan together to start with. I mean, this is a wonderful feel-good bill, but it's totally and very expensive, and I personally don't believe it will help at the end of the year if it helped 200 or 300, and somebody might say, that's wonderful, but the expenditure, you might as well just go out and buy them a home. You wouldn't have to have
members
one. So I guess that's the A29 or...
Mr. Chairman,
Senator 28 Shide, or whatever it was.
Our staff has some suggestions of changes to incorporate in the 828. If you could go over those before. Mr. Mosman.
Mr. Chair, members, Senator Shide, I'm wondering on the 828 amendment, there are some dates starting on page 2, line 10. 2014, should that be 2012?
Actually, yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
And Mr. Chair and members, then on page 5, line 20, 2012. And then on page 8, line 18, 2012. And I think that's all.
Mr. Chair, I'd incorporate those.
They've been incorporated. Further discussion on the 828 amendment. There being no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote on Senator Anderson's motion to adopt the 828 amendment. All in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Opinion of the chair, the motion prevails.
Okay.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that Senate File 340 as amended be recommended to pass.
Mr. Boswell.
Mr. Chair, I think, members, we have just a bit of additional cleanup quickly. If you turn to the second engrossment, you should have that in your packets also. The A28 amendment, which you just adopted, has money is going into the special revenue fund, so there's some conflict here. On page 26, line 2, I think if you said here that the mediation account after established in the state treasury, delete as a special revenue account in the general fund and insert in the state treasury. Then, Mr. Chair and members, also in addition to the division report, I think you could strike all of the language from line 26.18 through 26.21, subdivision 4, which restates where the proceeds go, and that is already in the A28 amendment. And then, Mr. Chair and members, on line 26.22, you could delete paragraph or subdivision A, the entire subdivision A there, paragraph A, pardon me, because the fees are already appropriated on line 14 and 15. I'm sorry, 16 and 17.
Mr. Watson.
Following on that, there's a reference in line 15 to subdivision 4. There I suggest deleting deposits from and deleting sources designated under subdivision 4 and insert to the account. So it says that the money is deposited in the account in advance of sufficient revenue to the account.
Senator Anderson moves that motion to amend, be on page 26, line 2, delete as a special revenue account in the general fund and insert in the state treasury. On line 25, or page 26, line 15, delete deposits from and sources designated under subdivision 4 and insert to the account after revenue. And on lines 18 to 21, in line 18, delete everything after the period. Delete all of lines 19, 20, and 21. Lines 22 and 23, delete the entire paragraph A and renumber the subsequent paragraphs.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Watson.
A couple more things. On lines 3 and 4, we can now delete as created in the state treasury and. We just did that in line 2. And then on line 5, you can delete fund and insert account.
I'll incorporate those.
Senator Anderson incorporates. Her discussion on Senator Anderson's motion to amend. There being no discussion, proceed to vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. The motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Anderson has moved that Senate File 340 as amended, we recommend the pass and sent to the floor. Discussion.
No.
There being no further discussion, we proceed to vote. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the bill is sent to the floor. Thank you, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and thank you, members of the committee.
Senator,
yes, Cole.
Mr. Chairman and members of this committee have apparently did a great job in my absence. My plane was about an hour and a half late because of mechanical problems. So, but we have instructions that we need to be downstairs. So, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get the center last week until tomorrow morning.
So, with that, our